of 1 meter. You sit, pray, and sing. Within a shelter 10 meters large, you sleep well. Rain sounds a lullaby. Within a field 100 meters large, grow rice and raise goats. Within a valley 1,000 meters large, gather firewood, water, wild vegetables and amanitas. Within a forest 10 kilometers large, play with raccoons, hawks, poison snakes and butterflies. Mountainous country Shinano, 100 kilometers large, where someone lives leisurely, they say. Within a circle 10,000 kilometers large, walking somewhere on the earth. Within a circle 100,000 kilometers large, swimming in the sea of shooting stars. Within a circle 1,000,000 kilometers large, upon the spaced out yellow mustard blossoms, the moon in the east, the sun in the west. Within a circle 10,000,000,000 kilometers large, pop far out of the solar system mandala. Within a circle 10,000 light years large, the galaxy full blooming in summer. Within a circle 1,000,000,000 light years large, Andromeda is melting away into snowing cherry flowers. Now within a circle 10,000,000,000 light years large, all thoughts of time and space are burned away. There again, you sit, pray, and sing. You sit, pray, and sing. On a mountain was asked by a monk, "What is the way?" "What a fine mountain this is," the master said in reply. "I'm not asking about the mountain, I'm asking about the way." "So long as you can't go beyond the mountain, you can't reach the way," replied the master. A famous soldier came to the master Hakuin and asked, "Master, tell me, is there really a heaven and a hell?" "Who are you?" said Hakuin. "Well, I'm a soldier of the great emperor's general guard." "Ah, nonsense," said Hakuin. "What kind of emperor would have you around? You look like a beggar." At this, the soldier started to rattle his big sword in anger. "Ooh," said Hakuin. "Ooh, you have a great big sword. I'll wager it's too dull to cut my head off." At this, the soldier couldn't contain his anger any longer. He drew his sword and threatened the master, who said, "Now you know half the answer. You're opening the gates of hell." And the soldier drew back and sheathed his sword and bowed. "And now you know the other half," said the master. "You've opened the gates of heaven." The master Akuyu showed his wisdom even as a child. Once he broke the precious heirloom teacup of his teacher and was pretty upset. While he was wondering what to do, he heard his teacher coming quickly. He hid the pieces of the cup under his robe. "Master," he said, "why do things die?" "Well, it's perfectly natural for things to die and for matter gathered in them to separate and disintegrate," said the teacher. "When its time has come, every person and everything must go." "Master," said little Akuyu, showing the pieces, It was time for your cup to go. The master Ryokan lived in a poor little hut on the mountain, and one moonlight night, he came home and he found that a burglar had been at his house looking for something to steal. But Ryokan was a hermit who didn't own anything. "Poor fellow," he said to the robber, "you've come such a long way and haven't found anything. I don't want to leave you empty-handed. Please take my clothes." And Ryokan stripped himself naked and handed his clothes to the robber. "Poor fellow," said Ryokan, going outdoors again when the robber had gone. "How I wish I could have given him this beautiful moon." Let's take a moment to meditate. If you are not familiar with the practice of meditation, you may want to place your feet on the floor in front of you. You may want to place your hands on your knees. You may want to straighten your spine, place your tongue against the roof of your mouth, and simply breathe through your nostrils, looking at an unfocused place 5 or 6 feet ahead of you. Simply breathe, be aware of your breathing. And as you breathe, you can also be aware of this mantra that the Zen teacher Thich Nhat Hanh shared. Breathing in, I'm at peace. Breathing out, I'm calm. Breathing in, I'm in the present moment. Breathing out, this is a wonderful moment. Say, you know, I think if you want to know the answer to what it means, you want to look at these beautiful sunflowers that have grown in the summer light. I think you ought to look into the eyes of a newborn child. I think you ought to listen to what the blue jay says to the mountain, because if they can't tell you, nobody can. People often ask about our faith, and just as frequently they're puzzled by the answers they receive. It's a religion with no doctrine, a time-honored tradition of breaking with tradition, telling people to trust their own wisdom more than any official teaching. You ask a Yu what he or she believes about God, or life after death, or the immortality of the soul, and you're likely to receive a variety of answers and non-answers. Well, kind of believe this, sort of that, not exactly sure. We have a hard time explaining ourselves to outsiders. It can all sound very confusing, a little opaque, and in this I think our tradition is similar to Zen, the spiritual tradition whose home is in China, Japan, and Korea, that's known for its enigmatic and inscrutable aspects. Those knocking on the temple door find it hard to come inside, while those who are already in find it all very easy to understand. Now, Buddhism is often misunderstood by Westerners. You've probably heard the old joke about the Buddhist who goes to the hot dog vendor. Yes. And goes to the hot dog stand. make me one with everything. Sometimes the stereotypes are positive. Saffron robed monks walking in silence and reverence, but just as often the stereotypes are negative, because Buddhism is non-theistic. Some say that it puts a void in place of God and an emptiness in place of salvation. And it's true, the Buddha taught that all things are empty. They're empty of any lasting, enduring form or permanence or identity. Everything that seems so important to us right now, what we got to do this afternoon, what's on our calendar, our resumes, our ambitions, all those things, they're like smoke. They slip through our fingers the moment we try to hang on to them. And it's this trying to grab and grasp and hang on to what can't be held, the Buddha said, that leads to so much of the world's unhappiness and misery. If we let go, if we could let go of some of that stuff, that would mean touching the void, which is often taken to be a bad thing. The void does not sound so good. But emptiness, from a Buddhist perspective, is a very positive thing. You know, think of the Grand Canyon. There's a lot of emptiness there. There's a lot of room. There's a lot of spaciousness to inhabit and live and explore. So emptiness may sound like a negation, but if you're looking for a doorway or a pathway or a window, emptiness might be just what you need. At least since 1844, when Elizabeth Peabody offered the first English translations of a Buddhist sutra in the Transcendentalist journal, The Dial, Unitarians have been very drawn to Buddhism, and today nationally about 2% of our members identify as Buddhists, while many more of you, I suspect, have some kind of yoga or regular meditation practice. I don't call myself a Buddhist, but I've done enough sitting and enough study to know a little about it. First of all, let me say that the differences between our faith and Buddhism are obvious. You know, stories are told about Zen masters who will sit in silence, and they usually sit facing the wall, just trying to understand the nature of the primordial mind. We are very uncomfortable with silence. Yeah. A lull in the conversation at coffee hour, and we start to get a little nervous. But there are also these similarities between our movement and Zen. First, both are experiential religions. And secondly, both are this worldly, life-affirming faiths. And third, each one is a path to liberation, that tries to help us get over our inner conflicts and neuroses and all the hang-ups we use to make ourselves unhappy, and free us up for a more savory, full-bodied existence. So let me say a little bit about these three. First of all, Unitarianism and Buddhism are both experiential religions, which means they can't be confined by rule books or by verbal formulas. What the Zen master is interested in teaching isn't something that's conveyed in words. And what we find to be most holy or precious or sacred in life isn't something that's wrapped up in a creed or a catechism. For both, the essence of religion is found in the living of it, in the spirit, not the letter. If you were to ask a Zen master, you know, what do you think about God, or the meaning of life, or you know, metaphysical questions, you might get an answer like, well, what I believe is that I'd like a cup of tea. Would you like some too? And what he would be saying there is that, you know, what's important is not these concepts we use to frame our experience. It's the immediacy of the experience itself. It's living it to the full and sharing it in hospitality with others, and Unitarians agree. We sometimes find it easier to say what it is we don't believe than what it is we do, because ours is an experiential religion. It's sometimes best expressed like a sculptor chipping away the parts that don't belong to reveal the underlying form. A puzzled monk once said to Fuketsu, "You say that truth can be expressed without speaking, and also without keeping silent. How can this be?" Fuketsu answered, "When I was in southern China, when I was only a lad, how the birds sang among the blossoms." An experiential religion isn't contained or handed down from books. It is caught, not taught. The Chinese proverb, "What comes in through the gate is not family treasure," is interpreted in Zen to mean that what somebody else tells you can't substitute for your own original knowledge. At a Zen retreat I attended several years ago, the teacher was a young Malaysian woman, the head of an abbey in Taiwan, and she was pushing us to be conscious, to be mindful, to be aware of our feelings, our sensations, the reality in which we found ourselves. Be your own confidence, the Buddha said. Hold to the truth within yourself. For Unitarians and for Buddhists, faith is a verb. It's not a noun. You know, it doesn't consist in a body of knowledge that's handed down. What it means is being fully alert and engaged with heart and mind with this wondrous creation of which we're a part. There's a saying, if you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him. It means that nobody else's knowledge, you know, is going to replace the things that you find out and know to be true for yourself. A young student was told to go on a long journey to another monastery, and he was upset because he thought this trip was going to interrupt his studies, and so he asked his friend, a more advanced student, Sogen, "Please, ask permission and see if you can come with me on this trip, and this way, as we walk, we can talk together, and I can learn as I travel." "Well, okay," the older student said, "but let me ask you a question. If you're hungry, what satisfaction do you if I eat? If your feet are tired, what comfort to you if I go on leisurely? And if your bladder's full, what's it to you if I piss?" Unitarian Universalism and Zen are both earthy, life-affirming religions. We are not ashamed about who we are, about what we are, about our own bodies, our own natures, our natural and physical needs. Every human being has a basic nature of goodness, one Tibetan teacher put it. This goodness contains tremendous gentleness and appreciation. As human beings, we can make love, we can stroke someone with a gentle touch, we can kiss someone with understanding, we can appreciate beauty, we can appreciate the best of this world. Now, we Unitarians call this the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And both our faith and Zen can be contrasted with religions that feel like people are fundamentally damaged or sick or sinful in some way. Living well, as we understand it, doesn't mean that we have to negate or deny who we are. It means cultivating ourselves, letting our own best, healthiest instincts emerge. One Zen monk that I know described the essence of his religion as making friends with oneself. Making friends with oneself. And friendliness would be a pretty good translation of the Buddhist term Maitri, which means a condition of broad acceptance, embrace of what is. What is? Listen to our joys and sorrows. Love, fidelity, grief, mourning, loss, uncertainty, order, change, chaos. It's all part of it. And like Zen, Unitarianism is a religion that's rooted firmly in insecurity. Above, not a tile to cover the head. Below, not an inch of ground for the foot. In a world with very few guarantees, with very few absolutes, we try to make our way through life with an awareness of, yes, the sadness and the pain, but also the beauty and the marvel of each and every step. Quite a few years ago, I spent a semester at a Buddhist study center in Colorado, the Naropa Institute. If any of you have been to Naropa, is it still there? Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right, yeah. You know, I didn't take this course, but one of the courses that was in the catalog that interested me was Zen archery. And some of you may know that our English word, sin, was an old archery term, which meant to miss the mark. You know, your aim is off. You're not hitting the target. In Zen archery, apparently there's no question of hitting or missing the mark, because at least for the beginner, you only stand about a foot away from the target. And the point is not to make a bullseye, it's to learn how to hold the bow and posture oneself and release the string with the proper frame of mind. Eugen Herigel, who wrote Zen and the Art of Archery, says that he spent about 5 years just mastering letting go of the bowstring. And that letting go is a metaphor for so much. Instead of looking at life as a game of, always hitting the center, scoring points, winning the game, Zen is playing a game where every shot is excellent if it's done with the proper elan. A life-affirming religion is also a tolerant religion. It's a tolerant religion because it doesn't see a world full of sinners or evildoers. It just sees a world full of other people who are struggling in need of compassion and help. In the 3rd century BCE, the Buddhist Emperor Ashoka of India issued a proclamation proclaiming that all religions could be freely practiced in his land. And from that day to this, hardly a drop of blood has been shed, making converts to the Buddhist path. We Unitarians share this commitment to tolerance and respect for people of other faiths. You don't have to insist that there's just one right way. While Bankai was preaching quietly to his followers, his talk was interrupted by a Shinshu priest who believed in miracles and thought that salvation came from repeating holy words. Bankai couldn't even go on with his talk, and so he asked the priest what he wanted to say. the founder of my religion, boasted the priest. He stood on one shore of the river with a writing brush in his hand, and his disciple stood on the other shore of the river, and he wrote the holy name of Amida under the parchment across the river through the midair. Can you do anything as miraculous as that? No. Then I answered, I only do little miracles, like when I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm thirsty, I drink. When I'm insulted, I forgive. The Zen philosopher D.T. Suzuki once remarked on what he saw as the contradictions in much of Western religion. Man against God. God against man. Man against nature. Nature against man. God against nature. Nature against God. Very funny religion. We could put it in more inclusive terms, but we tend to agree with the Buddhists that life doesn't have to be a perpetual conflict. That this universe is not a fundamentally bad place, not some place we have to escape from. We can acknowledge bad things happen. They do, while still being conscious of the marvel and delight and privilege of being human. The Buddha told this parable. A traveler was fleeing a tiger who was chasing him, and he ran and ran till he came to the edge of a cliff. The tiger was right behind him, so he jumped over the cliff and he grabbed onto a vine and found himself suspended there in midair. The tiger was above him and he heard a snarl down below, and there was another tiger looking up at him right below him. He was holding onto the vine, and out of a little crevice in the cliff came two mice, a white mouse and a black mouse, and they started to gnaw on the vine that he was holding to, and he could see that they were quickly going to eat through the vine. And then he looked, and also on the vine there was a bunch of grapes, and he took one of the grapes and put it in his mouth. Oh, how delicious. How delicious. The liberating message of Zen and Unitarianism alike is that life, it's sweet, it's delicious. It's meant to be appreciated, not rejected. It's meant to be savored, not hurried through. It's meant to be celebrated, not mourned in its swift, bright passing. The Zen tradition maintains that the Buddha transmitted his entire teaching to his chief disciple by holding aloft a flower and then remaining silent. To understand our faith, look at the mist rising on the mountain, or listen to your footfall in the aspen leaves, or ask the wild rose where it gets its red. If they can't explain it, nobody can. The thought manifests.